This Week in Retronauts, an unprecedented third episode about Asterix games, and I honestly never thought we'd reach this point. Hello, welcome to Retronauts, where, as you may have established from the thing I just said, there was a theme song between me saying it and now, but to me, I just said it. So, you know, I don't want to confuse you. I don't want to, like, pull back the curtain too much here. You know, we're going sort of inside baseball on Retronauts. But basically, we're talking about Asterix again for the third time. I never thought we would speak about Asterix three times. I knew there are a lot of Asterix games, but I really didn't think we'd get into this level of detail on them. And I'm delighted that we have, because I could fair say I don't think anyone else has ever bothered in the history of all of time. Including maybe the people who worked on them. But, that's a mean-spirited joke. Let's just introduce everyone. I'm Stuart Jip. Now, who's with me today? Let's go in reverse order of evilness, maybe. No, is that fair to say? No? Let's establish amongst yourselves who is the most evil, and we'll begin there.
I say Audrey's the most evil.
I have no objection.
Oh, that is there we quite go. That's true. Evil.
That's the next episode, by the way. The next four-parter is Phoenix Games.
Oh, wow. If I'd have known that, I probably wouldn't have. Never mind. Anyway, hello, yes.
All right, Thomas, you go.
I thought you were. Okay, then I go. Right. So, I'm Thomas Nickel. I am here to talk about Asterix, and I put on my striped pants to do that.
So you're the least evil by a process of elimination. That would be.
I'm surprised, but from the looks of it, yes.
Just don't make Thomas be late for his ramen. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay.
And yes, I'm John Linneman from Digital Foundry, here to talk about these games. I can't wait to talk about the latest cryo banger. It's gonna be something.
I'm Audie Surly. I actually have gone this deep into these games about 11-12 years ago.
Oh, okay.
On,
all right.
Hardcore Gaming 101 with my extensive research on these games, which is why we have three parts of this.
Okay, that's
I'm
fair
very
enough.
Happy
that's
to be
enough.
Here for the first time.
Let's say that the most no one else has bothered in the history of recorded time in the form of speaking words out loud.
That is probably true.
Okay.
I do not believe there is like a roundtable discussion about Asterix happening.
However,
anywhere else in the world.
In your dead medium of writing, you are top of the pile.
Well, thank you.
Well, if Audie is writing offline, online, then I'm even deader because I still write in print magazines, so
yes,
I am the real
so.
Dinosaur here.
I'm afraid so. I didn't want you to find out this way, Thomas.
No, I know. I just noticed that my arm is starting to skeletize slowly.
Oh boy. Where did we leave this last time? We just finished doing the 16-bit sort of era, hadn't we?
Yep.
Yeah.
All the 16-bit, we did the arcade game, all the fun stuff.
Oh yeah.
So now that we've done all the stuff that people probably fondly remember the most, we're leaning into the sort of 32-bit and later era.
Yeah.
With, I guess we should just jump straight in, Asterix on the PlayStation. Three outings, technically. Where do we start with these?
Well, I think we left the other episode also talking about kind of where Asterix as a franchise had gone, which is kind of on a downwards trend in popularity and in quality. And leading into the 32-bit era, I think it's kind of important to establish that in the 16-bit era, it kind of peaked, and you got some very good games out of it with people very familiar with comic books and things like this. But when you get to PlayStation, not only is there a new generation on video gaming here, kind of discovering video games for the first time, or even late, because PlayStation brought in a demographic that kind of hadn't been caught yet. So these games are sort of interesting, I feel, because this first one we're talking about, which is Asterix the Gallic Wars, or Asterix only on PlayStation, only released in Europe in kind of limited territories and based on the comic book. But later on, we'll see that there's a new take on Asterix that's a little bit more interesting. But yeah, this one...
Oh, yeah.
It kind of harkens back to, I think it was in episode one that we talked about the CDI Asterix, which was like this board game.
Oh, you had to get it in there, right?
Well, I mean, I have to talk about CDI every day. Asterix. That's why my mom doesn't call me anymore.
Caesar's Challenge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one I played on the Macintosh Classic.
We went through it. It's not that bad. Here, we kind of go back to that board game take again, but now we're going more into the Risk territory.
Yeah.
By which we mean literally the game Risk, taking a risk with it.
This game does not take any risks. It is very by the books when it comes to applying the rules of Risk and looking like Risk. But that doesn't necessarily mean that this is in any way bad or, you know, a letdown. I actually think this is pretty fun.
No. I mean, what I can say is recently I was at John's place and we just said, okay, let's do a homework this time for the podcast and play the games, actually.
Mm-hmm. I did that for prior games. Don't put me in that bucket.
I'm not implying anything.
No. I want to make it clear at this point that since we're talking about it, since it's out in the open, I have never played any of the games we've talked about or ever.
What a shock. You were playing Dizzy this whole time.
Oh, please.
So we played that game. We had no idea what was coming. I just thought, okay, it's going to be some blocky, some 50-hertz brawler-style game with bad hit connections.
Which you kind of get.
late. But we just were, huh. No, that's something. That's unexpected.
You know what's really frustrating, Thomas, when you say all this, is that every time I've been to John's place, we've seen a copy of this game at the various retro shops. I'll pick it up and I'll look at John right in the eyes. I'll be like, John, my dear friend, this game is great.
Oh, it's Chuck Rock all over again.
And he would be like, yeah, you know what? It's a PAL game. Whatever.
Yeah, it turns me off.
This is good. You need to pick it up. And finally, thanks to this show, you know, Retronauts, it saves lives because finally John Lindman has played Asterix the Gallic Wars after years of insisting from my side. Because this is a really, really fun, somewhat basic, but a really fun romp.
Yeah. But I think the basic nature is just, it's part of the fun, I think. If it was more complex,
it wouldn't have worked.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's kind of look at that too. So
I kind of want to talk about how it works because I came into this not knowing anything about this. I have since now, Thomas and I, we played it on PlayStation. Then I went and grabbed the PC version and installed on my Windows 98 PC.
So you finally got your 60 hertz action.
Yes. And as you guys say, it is essentially just Risk, right? But you're moving the magic potion around to all your territories as you expand, right? Which ties perfectly in with the themes of the series. And you're basically trying to advance through there, and it's just this game of strategy. And then, you know, when you go up against your opponent, they enter your sort of tile. You have a little battle based on the number of, I guess, troops or how much magic potion you have, and that determines the winner and the loser, right? Simple stuff. But then in between all of these strategy sections, they included these mini games, kind of. Like, for instance, the very first thing you encounter, it's like a platforming game where you walk from left to right as, can you play as Asterix and Obelix? Cause I remember just being, playing as Obelix, and he kind of like strolls along slowly. You're collecting coins, platforming, brawling. And then you get to the end, and then it continues. And I actually like this conceptually because it does add a little bit more to the experience, even if it's not that well executed. But
it's not bad either, though. It should, like,
it's perfectly fine, I think.
It's perfectly fine within kind of as a subsection to that overall game map and the board game thing. But yeah. Those gameplay bits are kind of tied to the larger camps because when you send the magic potion to the smaller camps, it just plays out kind of like a fast Langerisser match. You just kind of see the Romans flying into the sky, and the visual and sound feedback on those battles is pretty fun. And I think that's something we'll get a little bit into is the sound design of the game because it really adds to just production quality.
Weirdly enough, though, with all that, I kind of feel like this could make a good modern mobile game.
Oh, like, absolutely.
This works super well on a phone with the touchscreen. I actually found playing it on PC, they switched to a mouse interface.
Yeah.
And the whole map even feels better that way.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think the PC version runs at 640 by 480, right?
Yeah, it's four times the resolution of the PlayStation game.
Yeah. So the PC version is absolutely kind of the way to go, but the PlayStation version
is good.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
The game also has exclusive animated scenes, which is one of the last times you'll find hand-drawn Asterix cartoon scenes.
Beautiful, too.
Yeah, they look great. Yeah.
Until Asterix and the Vikings, which is several years down the line. But yeah, it looks great. The English dubbing, I will say, not very good in terms of the characters. The narration is fine. But if you are a fan of Asterix, these voices are non-union and very clearly so, so to speak. I'm not saying, it just sounds like something where these kind of sounds familiar, but not as good as you remember kind of thing.
No.
So it's a little bit hokey in that way.
Another thing there to comment on, so I mentioned the platforming minigame, but there's also others.
Yeah, like there's like whack-a-roman,
but the one that got Thomas and I that we just couldn't seem to figure out is the throw-a-roman one.
Yes.
You recall that where you like have to spin him around, as Obelix, and then you let him go, and for
we
some reason
not get it to work, not a chance.
Yeah,
we tried it often.
Asterix game series tradition, there's one minigame that you can't figure out the controls for.
Yeah, we just could. I feel like we eventually got it by accident, but you, because of the way it works, you need to complete the minigame to take over the territory, from what I remember. So you can get stuck there a lot, and if you fail, you basically lose that turn.
For what it's worth, I mean, it could be worse, because I don't know how to play Risk, so I just got overrun immediately. I didn't know what was going on. I never even got to any of the minigames. So.
I mean, you just conquer. You just build up your army and conquer.
It's all about the numbers, basically.
Yeah, it's easy to say that.
It's a game of world domination. Watch Seinfeld. You learn all about Risk.
Okay.
I thought you British were good at that.
Wow.
Thomas, jeez.
Deep
low blow there.
Damn.
Oh, sorry.
Just the listener numbers now in that one territory went down. And they couldn't go that much lower. But, so the minigames, I think... So there's also Bowl-a-Roman.
If Bowl-a-Roman.
Correctly. There are some other ones later on, because the game does progress. So it is a board game, but it has a somewhat interesting linear structure. So.
Yeah, because you can't just jump ahead to the late territories, right? You have to work your way there.
You have to work your way there.
Put levels and such. Like there's like the pirate ship level and various other like platforming levels that are more difficult, but you can't get to them right away, right?
Right. So, yeah, it's a really fun experience. I bought this for PlayStation when it came out. I saw it in one magazine. It was very much kind of a budget release. Even if you look at the cover, if you Google it and look at the PlayStation cover,
yeah, it's just not appealing.
The PC box.
Oh, it's just like, it says Asterix, and that's it.
Says,
you're just like, okay.
Yeah, the box doesn't do much to kind of sell you on it, and being a fan, obviously,
and
I bought it.
That's the thing, though, is I wasn't aware of what this was when we went into it. So just seeing the cover art, it could have been anything. I was like, wait, is this related to like the prior Asterix games that we covered on the last episode?
Hmm.
But no, it's definitely not.
I'm looking at the box art now, and what it is that, if just in case people were wondering, Asterix has become enormous. And
he's
standing
and
on the mainland,
like a Roman, right?
And he's throwing another, and a similarly enormous Roman, while Obelix does his Obelix laugh in the corner.
Yeah,
and and
weird composition.
John saw the cover and thought, "I don't see what there is to get out of this." Whereas you saw the cover and said, "Oh, Asterix is present. I will buy this."
Yes, I'm a weak person, and I still buy games based on this, if Asterix is on a cover or not. But yeah, even so, it was hard to say. I mean, you didn't pick it up when I suggested it. I think mostly because of the 50 hertz kind of issue.
Yeah, that turns me off.
You don't buy PAL PlayStation games, which is understandable. But yeah,
but of course, it is in this like, case, it's only PAL, so no way around it PAL. Unless you go for PC.
PC, yeah. So, and it doesn't necessarily need to run in 60. Obviously, that is preferable for any game, but it should be noted that like the 3D sections aren't like very smooth as they are. The animations are capped at a very low frame rate, and just the general mechanics of it aren't like based around reflex and fast gameplay. It's very much just based on like punching the onset of Romans, collecting the coins, get out. There's a few bosses. There's like the bull, and things like this. So I think the best part of the game, though, and that's not to diminish anything else that we've talked about, because it is a really fun game, if a simplistic risk board game, but the music in this game is really, really good and super underappreciated.
So one other thing I would like to talk about here, though, is the developer, because I do think there's some interesting and surprising history here, because it was developed by a studio called Warthog.
Yeah.
Warthog Games, right? And they had, it was mostly people that had previously worked at Electronic Arts, right? Mm-hmm. And if you actually look through some of their games, you might recognize, you know, they did some licensed stuff. Like, they were the ones, I think, that did those Tiny Toon Adventures games on, like, the later ones. Like, I think.
Oh, Toonenstein.
Plucky's Big Adventure.
Yeah, they and, did those, yeah.
Like, Wacky Stacker, stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They also.
Sorry, yes.
They also made games like Star Lancer, which was on PC and Dreamcast, which is a space flight sim that kind of relates to like the old privateer games in a way. It's like a spiritual successor to that. They did a Richard Burns Rally back in the PS2 era. They also did, if you remember, Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter.
Yes, of course.
Right? So they did this weird mix of like the more serious, mature games. And then stuff like Tiny Toons Adventures. They did a couple Animaniacs games. They did Asterix. They even did some Harry Potter stuff. Like, all these, like, sort of, like, those types of IP. So it's very interesting. But then, apparently, these guys went on to do work under the name Gizmondo, producing stuff for the ill-fated Gizmondo device, if you recall that. And then they closed.
And that is interesting that you bring that up, because if you look at the 3D sections and kind of the engine itself, you can kind of see some Gizmondo games that look similar. And so I'm sure some of this code, or it, kind of modeling at least, kind of continued into the Java-like looking games.
Exactly. Wait a minute. They also did that... Loons, the Fight for Fame. Do you remember that?
Yeah, oh yeah, okay.
It was the one with the serious, like, Looney Tunes characters on the cover, all looking like, you know, they're ready to kick some butt.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I forgot about that one.
Most of us did, John.
So, I mean, that's what's interesting to me. When you look at a game like this and you look at who actually developed it, and you're just kind of like, wow, okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of pedigree to this game. I mean, this is, you know, from the gameplay to the overall structure, good mechanics, great music, as mentioned. There's really nothing wrong with this, other than the fact that it is locked to the European territory on PlayStation.
Yeah, so it's 50 hertz only.
Yeah, but if you do pick up the PC version, I don't know how it runs on modern systems.
I didn't try that, and I suspect not well.
I seem to recall when I did the article back in the day, I had trouble running it back then, and that would have been like 2009, 2010. So I'm going to guess that it's going to not work today. But by all means, someone out there can try and maybe find a fix for that. But
To maybe add one thought about that, I think this is the exact game you would get when Asterix is at a low point as an IP overall. Because I think at this point, the brand wasn't that expensive anymore as compared to before, and they just could do whatever they felt like doing and not be beholden to, we have to put in a lot of money and make this big brawler type game.
Yeah.
So I think this is quite quite matching for its time.
It is, and it was also released as a budget release from the beginning, by the way. So when I
Of course, I mean, it's PlayStation 99, you couldn't usually charge full price more for
I believe I paid
smaller games.
About €20 for it, brand new, when it came out. So, and it was discounted very quickly. I remember this was a game that I, back in these days, much like a Phoenix game, I remember seeing this in supermarkets a lot by the cash register. There used to be PlayStation and PC games by, like, you know, the candies.
And of course, again, you have to say then, if you see a game in the supermarket, that feels very devaluing for the game, for everybody,
like,
except for
like Phoenix games.
Yeah, like Phoenix games. They were only sold at like Tesco and whatnot for, I mean, like £5.
Can it be any good if it's at Aldi or at Tesco for a couple of pounds or euro or D-mark back then?
Well, in this case, it was, right? In this case,
yeah,
this is a great game.
Yeah, but of course, just the thinking back then. I mean, it's 1999. I have Dreamcast at home. I play all these awesome arcade stuff, and there is this game, The Supermarket, with asterisks on it, which is not a big thing. Yeah, I mean, it's a recipe for being overlooked.
I mean, I was the one who bought the asterisks and the Phoenix game at the same time, so...
But then I say to, in response...
Makes me think of The Simpsons again. Somebody bought your book.
You came into Tesco's from your Dreamcast session, you know, and now look which branding is still around. And it's all because of Asterix.
Hey, man, there's no Turbo Trucks on Dreamcast. That's all I'm going to say.
This is true. This is true.
But they did have Fluygen Brothers. Fluygen Brothers just couldn't pull them out of the fire.
Oh, God, Fluygen Brothers. Who wants a sequel to Fluygen Brothers?
Yeah, it's like episode one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so where are the other episodes?
It's coming out along with the Sin episodes too, okay? It's coming.
Looking then next, there were two other games on PlayStation that were Asterix based, right?
So there was one that is actually directly kind of based around the work here, which I think was developed for around the same time as this.
Which one? Mega Madness?
Mega Madness. I know it as Max Delirium. It is also called Mega Madness, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought this one came out in like 2001 or something.
Yeah.
Which is why we tried
later
to play it last.
So here's the difficult thing about this game. So I think 2001 is kind of the official date and on the trademark and stuff.
Yeah.
But I absolutely recall that I think the PC version, at least, I found that earlier here in the stores because I picked this up. Again, super random. I'd never heard of this or seen it
Interesting.
Before. And it's... I mean...
Okay, I mean, it's basically a minigame collection, right?
It is a minigame collection. It does have some kind of open platform structure as well, but it mostly is based around the minigames.
So,
and
I actually think we should start again with the developer this time, because I was actually looking into this as well, and I thought it's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's from a studio called Unique Development Studios.
Yeah, it's
right? Unique.
It's a Swedish company.
Yeah, exactly. They're Swedish. Yeah. And once I start looking into them, I recognized some of the games they had worked on, which actually led me down this other rabbit hole. So on their Mobi Games profile, it lists Screamer Rally. And I was like, wait a minute. Yep. They didn't make Screamer Rally. I love the Screamer games. Those were actually made by Milestone, which published by Virgin. And they did Screamer 2. But they're still around today doing all sorts of modern racing games, such as Hot Wheels Unleashed and the Ride games.
Right.
So why were they credited? Well, it turns out that Unique Development Studios provided music specifically for Screamer Rally. But they were also doing their own games. They did various pinball games like Absolute Pinball, Slam Tilt, and things like that. They seem to have started out actually on the Amiga and Atari ST with another pinball game, I guess, called like Obsession. Mm-hmm. So like this studio was all about pinball. And then they made something called Mall Maniacs, which is basically like this weird like advertising game that has you going around the store like buying groceries and such.
I remember this, yeah.
And it's like, what on earth?
Yeah.
So like their track record is really weird. Like the fact that they're slightly involved with Screamer Rally, they do a shit ton of pinball games, pardon the French. And then somewhere along the way, they're picked up to do an Asterix game. The same year that they also did like World's Scariest Police Chases, apparently.
Yeah, so they were very much the studio for hire. I actually know some people that used to work there, two people.
Oh, they also have some rare games I got to mention. Futurama, yeah. They did PS2 and Xbox, which is
I love that game.
That's one of the most expensive games, I think, on Xbox, is it?
Yeah, it's really expensive. Wow.
They also did what I call is like the bargain bin decoration, which is EJ Club World, because I swear that's one of those games that you just find like 50 copies of just like dumped in a bin somewhere alongside like Madden.
Wait, hold on. Futurama is expensive on Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
I believe so, yeah.
I've got that on Xbox. I'm rich. Is it,
good for you.
I don't know if the PAL version is as expensive.
Is it the PAL version?
Oh.
I can find out in real time thanks to price charting.
Okay.
I will find it. So, yeah, it's the US version that's expensive. The PAL version is worthless.
Yeah.
Right.
Actually, wow, the PS2 version is also expensive. So we're learning new stuff. So
that's weird.
Unique Development Studios made a uniquely expensive game, and they also made Asterix Mega Madness.
I'm just gonna say it because there's not gonna be a Futurama episode. I thought that was a pretty good game. Just hold hands
it's
up.
It's a fairly okay game.
I enjoyed that.
It's probably better than this.
It is probably better than this. So Unique Development Studios generally were for hire, and they would do a bunch of games. They were sort of like, I think they're still around, but like at the time, at the very least, they were kind of like that system of Phoenix Games that you could just kind of hire them for cheap and get stuff out.
Hmm.
And in this case, the game actually runs on the 3D engine that is in Gallic Wars. So it looks very similar. It feels very similar.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that.
So Infogrames must have owned the work fully that was done on that, which I'm not too surprised about. I mean, Infogrames had a very strong hold on anything developed for Asterix.
Also had the best song in the world.
Infogrames?
Oh, there was actually that Infogrames song.
The song.
You should put that in here, right here. Play it.
Yeah, play this mysterious Infogrames song. I don't know what.
I'll put the link in for the editor to play it because it's fantastic.
Okay.
Where they're like singing about Alone in the Dark and all their franchises.
Oh my god.
It's hilarious. But anyway.
But, yeah, it's a multiplayer game. I think, if I remember correctly, it's like two players on PlayStation, but you can actually play up to four on Windows. But it's not great, I will say that much. There's not that much to say about this.
I do want to interject again, sorry, because there is one great aspect to this, and it's the language selection screen. When you pop this game in for the first time, it asks you to choose between six different languages. And what they've essentially done is there's like the boar, a pig or whatever, sitting in the middle of the screen.
It's Asterix, the boar. You have to have a boar in there.
Of course. So he's they texture him according to the flag of the selected country, and then they sort of have a custom animation for each country. Like when you select Great Britain, they show him holding a cup of tea and delicately like putting his spoon in there and then taking a sip of the tea.
That's pretty good.
For Germany, he's like wearing like Lederhosen. For Italy, he like sings opera very loudly and then it cracks the screen like glass. Stuff like that.
So they put the most effort in the game into that. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying this. Yes, okay. It's fantastic.
I got to be honest with you, that does sound pretty great.
We put the disc in, we saw it, and yep, this is cool. I think we spent more time with the language selection than with the rest of the game.
Yeah, pretty much. It was fantastic.
It's really funny because like the game itself, you know, the previous game did retain some of the humor. When you sent the magic potions into fights, the Romans fly off the screen and it has funny sound effects and whatnot. These mini games, it's like Food Feast was one of them. There's Shield Run.
Sounds like an Atari Lynx game.
Bash. Yeah, Feast. It's just like really rinky dink, simple mini games, and they're not funny. They're like really not funny.
No.
So it's clearly, I feel like there's even some statement there of making the language selection screen the funniest part of it, because I don't think development on this had a lot of time and was fun.
It fits what I always say. I mean, almost no matter how shitty the game is, a developer will find some way to have fun with it at some point somewhere. Sure.
They try to insert little jokes here and there as well, like when in the ballista minigame, it shows your ammo on the side as you fire it, and it's just all sorts of random things that they throw, like chickens, Romans, you know, things like that.
But for an Asterix game, I think that is pretty basic for what you can do.
It's very basic. Yeah. Very basic. So,
and it's still not the most basic Asterix game on the PlayStation now, is it?
Oh, God. Oh,
something's coming up here.
Yeah, this is where we are.
Are we ready to do that one? Because
I mean, let's just say, so Mega Madness, again, I think the only last thing, and we're not quite there yet, but almost, but Mega Madness, Max and Delirium, it's also one of the games that were very region locked, in the sense that I think this was released in Sweden, Germany, UK, and France, but yeah, that was not the only territory.
Well, I mean, there were six languages on there, so Italy as well, and
Spain.
I don't know how widespread it was in those territories, though.
That's true. We just know that they had this language support, but it's not clear if it released.
So theoretically, it could have come out.
Yeah, it's an eFigs thing, but
that's true.
Because you could find this with different names. There's even more than, like, these two names is one, but it has a full Swedish name, which I'm trying to remember. I think it's Galenskap in Kvadrat. I actually have it somewhere here, but I'm not going
to
get up and
look for it. Does that translate out to Mega Madness?
No, it's like Squared Lunacy. Squared is in, like, you know, square diameters.
Oh, there's the German name. It's Maximum Gaudium.
Maximum.
That's
Gaudium.
Pretty funny.
It's actually,
So it has different names per territory as well.
And then there's UK name Asterix Bloody Mental.
I haven't found that yet. That's the last part of my collection I haven't found. But this is one of those. If you're like me, you have to own like six copies of it because that's different names per territory. Mm. So, and of course, across PC and PlayStation. Before we lose ourselves into complete madness, we should mention very quickly that there was a Game Boy Color game released around the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is The Search for Dogmatics. And a lot of people have not heard of this one because this was only released in Germany and France. It does have an English name, but you can't really find any box copies or anything with that name on it.
And it's a late Game Boy Color game, too. Like, by that point, GBA
was... It's super late.
Well, actually, yeah. I guess, was this 2000 or 2001?
So, it was developed in 2000. I think it came out at the end of 2000.
Okay, so it's somewhere in 2000. So, maybe not that late for Game Boy Color, because Game Boy Color had a very short life, right? GBA was out the next year in 2001. But still, this is not a game you see often. Even here in Germany, I have not seen many copies of this.
Well, interestingly enough, one of my first trips to your place where we went to some retro shops, I found this sealed for a few bucks.
That's right. I remember that.
One of the stores. Yeah. And
I was baffled.
I was very excited.
Very excited. And I was like, all right.
Okay, that's all to you.
This was one that escaped me. Yeah. I mean, hey, man. But I was very excited because when this came out, you know, I was sitting there on the message boards, just like, where's that Asterix game? And no one could answer me back in 2000. And because this had an extremely limited regional release, and even importing it, which I was someone that imported games throughout the 90s, but I could not find this game. No one was stocking it. So I never got it until that trip in 2018 or whenever it was. I found a sealed copy of this and picked it up. I never played it outside of researching it for that article.
Did it live up to your expectations?
So, I mean...
Should I rephrase the question? Was it... sorry, go on. Sorry. I was going to say, was it good? It's probably the best question to ask.
It looks absolutely stunning for a Game Boy. Yep. It almost looks, you know... I think it's comparable in a way to Shantae, in the sense that it's a later Game Boy Color release, and it's really pushing the graphical capabilities of the console. Super smooth, beautiful, large graphics. Great color usage.
It does look great.
Yeah, it looks real great. It's just that, and it animates beautifully as well. The problem is, it's one of those games that, like, the animation came before anything else, and so the controls are not optimized for that amount of frames and visual feedback.
Yeah.
So it just feels like you never fully have the control you would want from the game. It's a little bit hard to explain controls without on a podcast in that sense without seeing it.
I think it's not
floaty, but it's just everything feels a bit delayed.
I think it can be compared to, in a sense, the flaws that I have with some of the other Asterix games, which is that, as I played this one, and in my experience, basically, you've got to be real near enemies to hit them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel great. Like, it really doesn't feel that good having to be that precise with your attacks. It's not like I found the game particularly hard, because the levels seem to be extremely short and samey.
Yeah.
But there's something that frustrated me about it. It does some interesting things. Like, there's a stage where you're going through a sort of a Roman camp, and a battalion of Romans in that sort of turtled up, you know, shield wall form come plowing through the foreground, like in, I don't know, like in Sunset Riders or something, you know? But they don't do anything with that. There could be interesting level design based around having to get to high ground before this battalion comes through, but it's nothing. It's just like there's never a threat. It's just, they're just there. And it sucked. It's a shame. It could have been really good, I think.
Can I chime in with some DF stuff here? Because I have a couple of huge complaints about this game that drive me nuts, that make it seem worse. First of all, the way the sprite works, right? They tried to make him somewhat animated. But as you know, you can only use so many different sprites to do an animation, right? Especially with memory limitations on the system. The problem here is that I feel like the sprites... they change too much per sprite. So like his leg will go from like one position to the other, and the gap is so big and sort of misaligned that it makes the sprite look sloppy and kind of unfinished in motion. So that feels bad, specifically with the jump. But what makes
this
so much
real bad,
what makes this like a million times worse, and I think this is it's a hardware limitation, but this is a multi-scrolling game, right? So you mostly go left to right, but it can also go up and down. The problem is for both sprites and background scrolling, left to right motion is full 60 frames per second, or the max refresh rate of the Game Boy, but vertical movement is all done at half rate. So if you jump, if the screen scrolls up, if anything happens vertically, that's only updated at 30 frames per second. So when you combine the two, you end up with this really weird, inconsistent mishmash of like half and full rate movement that makes everything just feel wrong. And you don't even have to understand what frame rate is to know that something looks weird about it in motion. And that's kind of the issue, is that none of it's very smooth. And so as a result, just moving Asterix around the screen feels bad.
I mean,
there's your Digital Foundry minute.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, though. It ties into kind of everything else we mentioned, and that's like just the feedback on anything you do from how the game operates on the screen and how it feels in your hands is off. Because your initial impression putting this on will be very positive. It absolutely pops off the screen. It looks gorgeous in still and slightly motion as well. It looks real good, but Yeah, the level design is pretty... It's not terrible. There's some neat ideas here. The platforming goes across a lot of different kind of like from the pirate ship to the Roman camp, like Stu mentioned. There's a lot of variety. It's not terrible, but it's also... It's a bit uninspired, I will say, at this point. And yeah, it doesn't live up to the way it looks. If you look at still images of this online, on the back of the box, you'd think this would have been a hidden gem. You would just think it looks like it should be great. It looks like it should be kind of like a Shantae type ordeal, but it really isn't.
Right.
So is it priced like a hidden gem?
No. I mean, it's priced fairly normal. I think I don't think
it's that expensive.
It's probably like $30.
I would say there's a good chance this could show up in a Metal Jesus video, though, as a hidden gem. It's like Europe only.
And then the price goes up.
And then hey, that happens with us too, though. Whenever I talk about something, everybody gets very angry about it. Like, you just drove the prices up.
Except for the Phoenix games.
John, maybe you can make a video where you say some of my most wanted games are like little shit, and then maybe I can get them for cheap.
Well, we tried that with the Phoenix games. It didn't work.
Has anyone like made a video specifically to tank prices on a retro game? That sounds like a fairly interesting challenge.
That would be difficult.
Well, let's try. But the music is... I mean, I always go back to the music in games because I love video game music. But, like, the music in this is fairly good. There's no standout track. There is no Alberto Gonzalez yet.
I was going to say, it's a big step down from the first Game Boy game.
Most things are from Alberto Gonzalez music on Game Boy. But it's done by... what's his name? Manfred Listner, who... he works for Shinnen.
His music, Manfred's music, is absolutely sublime.
Right.
He does amazing work on that side. So,
like,
this one's perfectly serviceable. It sounds like a European Game Boy game, but it's not his best work.
Yeah, the melodies just don't, like, catch you.
Exactly.
Like, it's very much background music, which I think
is kind of my... perfectly cromulent in a way.
But then he would like very quickly do stuff like the Iridium 3D, which would release with Game Boy Advance like the next year and stuff like that. And that's amazing sounding.
Same person. So, again, this is a limitation probably from like either a time.
Budget, time. I don't know.
A budget. Yeah, something like this. Because, I mean, so the game isn't done by Shinnen. That should be important to say. Shinnen was only... put on audio and music side for the game. The game is actually by Rebellion, which is somewhat surprising.
It's kind of unusual for them, right?
Yeah. And I think it explains a lot of just the proficiency with the graphics. I mean, just the graphical detail. Performance and such that you mentioned, probably not as explained by Rebellion, but it looks... great.
I mean,
it looks high quality.
This is the same year that they released a video game adaptation of The Mummy.
Wow.
Which,
look at that.
That ain't great.
Big year for Rebellion.
Wait, they did a Largo Winch game for PlayStation then, too? I remember Largo Winch.
Yeah, Largo Winch.
Also, wasn't every bargain bin at a point.
Yeah.
Is Largo Winch the name of a guy? That's wild.
I think the most famous thing, though, from back then that they were known for still was obviously Alien vs. Predator for the Jaguar and all the other Alien vs. Predator stuff that they would do, including Alien vs. Predator for the PC, which was released like a year before this and is fantastic.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, this was after the PC.
I think it's pretty clear that they were already a large enough company by that point to have multiple teams making multiple projects, right?
Yeah.
And that is extremely evident here.
Yeah, I think we struggled to kind of find things to say about this because it's just so by the book.
It's just a generic, choppy feeling platform game.
If it's something that you see, I'd say pick it up just because it's a later release. You know, the fact that you're seeing it anywhere means that like it's an uncommon find.
I guess it's pretty worth seeing the visuals because they are impressive.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They don't move that smoothly, but the actual visual quality is pretty impressive for the Game Boy Color. And they don't do... It's one of those rare ones where they don't do much in terms of like shading, but they try to do a lot of fairly large, complex tile sets, right?
And you just drove up the price another 10 euros.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I mean, it looks very much like comic book panels
yeah,
in terms of like coloring
does.
And stuff. So
less so good. On the real screen, though.
Yes.
I played it on Analog Pocket, though.
I played it on Pocket
there.
As well. For the first time before this, I played it on Pocket. And again, I was just stunned. It's like, man, this looks so good. And then I start playing. It's like, oh,
nope,
man.
Not good.
I wish it played better.
You know what's you know what this game is better than, though? Our next game on the list.
Okay, let's do this.
let's go there.
Hey, you know what else is better than our next game?
Oh man, so
getting like one of your hands cut off.
Okay. I'm gonna talk a little bit about what this game is based on, and
yeah,
then I'll let John.
That's important. Yeah,
let's lead up to
and,
that first, okay,
and
then
I'll
go into
John,
my experience with this.
Yes, because
our experience.
Yes, you were
you
there,
don't
Thomas.
Get paid for that yourself. I suffered through it as well.
Oh yeah, we sure did.
So, I think it was 1999. I mean, the Asterix franchise did get kind of like a boost because
it was enormous, really big in Germany at least.
Yeah, so what kind of happened was that, you know, there was a slump in the comic book quality, and so kind of getting interest back in Asterix meant you had to go somewhere else. And there, for the longest time, I think since the 70s, there had been an idea of making live-action movies. There was a live-action movie that was Lost Media, believe it or not, until fairly recently.
Whoa, okay.
From television.
Okay.
And I think it's a German production from the 60s, which was aired on television at some point. It's not very good, I will say that much. but until 1999, the idea of making a live-action Asterix movie had been around. And finally, it happened. It was done by... it was directed by Claude Sidi and starred... Christian Clavier and Gérard Depardieu as Obelix. Today, I think a little bit more of a controversial figure than he was back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Back then, he was huge.
Yeah,
I mean, he's still huge, but he was
literally
popular,
and figuratively.
Huge.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And this movie was huge in Europe. Yeah, this cannot be understated. I mean, this was...
I don't have a frame of reference for this.
No, I don't. I mean, I know it had a very limited show.
My wife knew about this, though. She was like, oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah, because it was a monumental occasion.
Yeah.
For Germany and France, it was
a huge cast of great actors.
Yeah. It was co-produced with German companies. I think Bavarian Film was involved. And it kind of... It takes some liberties with Asterix. So it's a live-action film kind of based around Asterix the Goal, the first comic book, and Asterix the Great Divide, Roman Agent. It takes things from all these different albums. But it kind of updates some of the iconography. So, like, their costumes are very different.
I mean, just more lifelike, what they could have lifelike. Looked like if it was more colorful back then.
Later movies, there are sequels to this. They actually go back to the original costumes and they look like terrible cosplay. So I actually really like the way they updated the look for this movie. It looks rustic.
These were good decisions.
Yeah. Very good decisions. Great effects. Great character actors, I think.
I mean, they had Gottfried Jon as Caesar, which was just brilliantly cast, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the casting for this film was almost perfect. And the thing, I remember I went to see this at the premiere. And I was telling my friend, who's also a big Asterix fan, who John met recently, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
he and I are huge Asterix fans, and I remember telling him afterwards, like, man, there were so many ugly faces in this film, and I couldn't be happier, because all these faces are so defined, and, like, the big noses, and, like, the lines are wrinkling. It's just, like, everyone is a character. Absolutely everyone on screen is a character, and the actors themselves, you can tell they're having so much fun with the source material here and the script. So this is just a movie that feels fun to watch. It feels like very much like the comic books in just how they also acted out, which is something that I think, if you haven't read the albums, it's almost impossible to kind of understand. But it feels like everyone involved loved the production and loved the fact that we had gotten to the point where this, you know, icon, European icon, could be brought to life in this film.
I mean, maybe just to compare for the American audience, it's a bit like when the first really good Marvel movies came out.
What about more like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles hit? The live action.
So film. I actually was going to make that exact goddamn comparison. Damn.
Okay.
This for me was comparable to 1990 when I got to see Ninja Turtles on the big screen. It was my favorite characters brought to life on screen and done wonderfully. Yeah. I know that some of the more like hardcore fans, I guess, of Asterix, we do exist. There's dozens of us. kind of feel like the deviations and some of the changes to the characters and just the lore is kind of stupid. But for a live-action film that, you know, 90 minutes introducing this world, it really works. And the core elements is still there. So, yeah, I don't know. I think the only thing I could say about the movie itself, we'll get into the games now, but the movie itself...
It must
itself,
have led to a fantastic game, if the, you know...
Well, I think the movie itself, the biggest gripe I have is the romantic elements, which I don't mind great romance in the film. That's one of the best elements of a drama, but the romance here is kind of weird, and it's very European. And now, looking at Gerard Depardieu, it gives some weird undertones to the film.
Well, I want to say that while you guys were enjoying this over in Europe, I had no idea that this existed in 1999 because I was too busy getting excited for The Phantom Menace.
Well, I saw that too.
That was also nice.
Yeah, that was fine. I went to see that too, and I mean, there was also faces in that film.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
And that film got the better game.
And The Matrix, I guess.
Oh, yeah. So, man. So, okay. Obviously, with Europe's biggest film production of all time, it was one... I think it's definitely one of the most expensive films ever produced in France. I don't know if it still holds a record for most expensive European film, but it certainly held a record for France. Maybe still. You'd think, with this monumental occasion we just went through, that a video game based on this film would be produced at a high quality and a high budget, wouldn't it?
You would think that, right? Now, I want to take a little side detour before we get into what this game is. The Matrix, when it got its two sequels, it received a game called Enter the Matrix, right?
Sure,
it was largely panned, right? It's not considered a great game. Now, I want you to imagine a different future where the game based on The Matrix comes out that year, and what you do in that game is you play as Neo, right? And he runs across the bottom of the screen very quickly, and floppy disks rain down from the top of the screen, and you punch the floppy disks, right? Like, I want you to imagine that. Now, you take that concept and you do that like 10 more times, and that's the whole game. Does that sound like a pretty good game to you? Do you think that would review better than Enter the Matrix?
I think it sounds about maybe a 1/5 less good than Enter the Matrix.
Yeah, so Well, my friends, that's what this Asterix and Obelix versus Caesar game turned out to be. And my God, take on Caesar. Yes.
Yep. It was something.
So first of all, it was developed by Cryo, the French developer known for classics. Oh, yeah. Cryo. Known for Mega Race, Mega Race 2, Lost Eden, and many other games.
Lost Eden, baby.
I have a fondness for some of
games.
Cryo's earlier games. I will not deny it.
I recall that. We started the game. I saw the logo and said, oh dear. And you were still, oh, it could be okay. Cryo is not that bad.
Could have Stefan Pick doing the music. There's a lot of potential.
Yeah, unfortunately,
Cryo being game.
As I would soon discover, there's a reason I stopped hearing about Cryo after that point. Lost Eden is because they went way downhill, and this is a perfect example of the later years of Cryo in which they just create garbage, because you start this thing up, you're playing as Asterix, but it's like a 3D model designed to look like the film version of Asterix. And it is so. Take what I said about the Matrix, but the first stage, replace the floppy disks with fish. You gotta punch 60 fish out of 80. Something like this, and you run back and forth across a 3D background. The thing is when you
very hard to control as well.
When you run, though, he has an animation that I would describe as a gentle stroll, a very careful, nice walk. But he moves like Sonic the Hedgehog after picking up the speed shoes. So you basically tap left, and he launches to the other side of the screen. But he does so with this walking animation. And that's it. Yep. So he's like in a constant walk, but like they zip the character model completely unconnected, disconnected from the floor, back and forth across the screen violently. Things fall out of the air. You position him under it and you whack that fish. And it continues like this for the entire game. But like there's maybe like 10, maybe even less levels. And it turns into stuff like there's one. It's like drink 10 drops of unicorn milk, prevent 10 Romans from doing the same. And it all amounts to just running back and forth in these very simple spaces over and over again. And each section takes a ridiculous amount of time. And that's it. That is the entire game. There is literally nothing else to do. How did this get made?
It got made, my friend. And oh my God, let's just compose ourselves, because like, you're talking about the graphics, because this looks like a game that Ed Gein designed, because like everyone has been scanned and like their skin has just been like put over this skeleton and stretched with it. They all look like mangled corpses. It is insane looking and so off-putting. It's like having digitized graphics, but they're all dead.
Well, it's like having digitized graphics that you then turn into PlayStation 1 era palletized textures and slather it onto low polygon models.
It's so uncomfortable to look at anything in this game. And like you mentioned, that gameplay, punching fish is one thing, and the back and forth pickup, like
that's the game. It's a back and forth pickup game.
It's an old man under the apple tree, just like, whoa! And like it's terrible, but I made this comparison back when I was doing the article back in the day. Like, this is straight up, and I think they knew this, this is a remake of Beat 'em and Eat 'em from the Atari 2600. Because you run under those trees, and these big old globs and drops of, like, this unicorn milk is dripping down, and you're just running back and forth with your mouth open.
Cryo,
they're the ones
you think
there.
Like, well, that's totally up my fetish alley, but it's just no. This is one of the worst games made.
Can we warn the audience? If you don't know what Beat 'em and Eat 'em is, I recommend you do not look it up.
Just tell you, it's a game where you just catch cum from big hot dicks.
All right, never mind.
This is
what I said.
Episode. They can go there.
Okay, they can go there.
So if you listen to this with the kids, then I'm sorry.
Come on, son. We're going to listen to my favorite thing from my childhood. Oh, God.
Classic Retronauts.
You're right. This is exactly that game.
And it's exactly that. It's that game, by the way, across all platforms. So there's a PlayStation 1 version only released in Europe.
Yeah.
There's a PC version, which runs at a higher frame rate and higher resolution, by the way. You should pick that up, John.
Oh, and I forgot that there's the Game Boy Color version.
There's the Game Boy Color version.
That was awesome. Amazing.
We like stared at each other like, wait, it's the same thing. But
it's
worse.
The exact same game.
We had a bit of hope it might be something resembling a quality game, but no chance.
Well, you'd think on the Game Boy Color, I had a thought that at the very least it might be more tolerable if it's more like a Game & Watch, you know? Apparently no.
They could. No. You're right. This is a Game & Watch game, right? That's fundamentally what we're talking about here. It's a Game & Watch style game, but with none of the charm.
And with none of the precise controls.
No, not that easy. It's
insane. Like,
it's insulting.
I'm a lover of bad video games. I believe Stu is as well. Like, yes. I believe he might have written a book recently, which is quite good. You should go pick it up.
Yeah, I wrote that book. All games are good except Asterix and Obelix Take on Caesar.
Yeah. That's European.
We had to cut down the title to fit it. Yeah.
I love a challenged game. Every game is good. It just has some issues sometimes. This game, though, is the quintessential licensed tie-in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like everything you've ever heard. Most of licensed games aren't that really that bad. You know, most of them are just fine. They're by the books. They're kind of boring. Some are great. This, though, is a cash-in. It is a lifeless cash-in based around a hot property at the moment. It tricked your kids to picking up smut. It is evil, it is awful, and it's in my collection.
That's what we wanted to hear. Thank you.
Is it the worst Asterix game?
By far.
By far.
There is that Atari 2600 game, which is just Taz, right? It's just a reskin of that, which I don't
Beats
find
him
that too fun. Yeah, but compared to this, I mean, forget about it. I'd rather play a Dizzy game.
Ooh.
What's up with it? I just don't get this Dizzy slice. I really don't. I just don't understand it.
I don't get Dizzy.
I
that's just an omelet I wouldn't want to eat.
I wouldn't want to eat either because it would cause the death of Dizzy.
Oh, yeah. No, I would honestly describe... So, you're talking about other movie games, like something like Batman Forever from Acclaim. It's like Game of the Year material next to this.
Yeah. I mean, you can play.
There is a bit of ambition behind it, but this is just they take the barrel, remove the bottom, and then they put the game somewhere far below.
Yeah, this is a porta potty with an endless gaping hole into the center of the earth.
Jesus.
It's just, it is, there's nothing good about it. There is like these scenes from the movie, but somehow they managed to take most of the scenes that weren't like the most interesting. So, it's just a terrible decision all around.
It's bad.
The only trivia I can give you for this that's slightly interesting, it's only interesting because I'm Norwegian. This was translated into Norwegian and released on PlayStation, and there's only a handful of games that actually had a straight-up Norwegian translation. Most, if there was any Scandinavian language, it would be Swedish. But this, for whatever reason, had a full Norwegian localization, and I would love to know who did it and talk to them about that process.
Unfortunately, they're no longer with us. sorry, that's a dark. I apologize.
So they jumped into that same hole this game went into.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, don't play this. There's no, like, it's not even funny. This is not something where you download the game.
We make
anymore.
It sound funny, but it isn't.
I haven't had any fun talking about this because I hate it.
Like, not even comparing the unicorn milk to that. Never mind.
Yeah, well, go watch that on YouTube or something and tell me I'm wrong.
Jeez, I can't believe that. I mean, that's not something I expected to become a point of comparison, but I guess here we are, you know?
Asterix Take on Caesar, baby. That title gets a whole new meaning when you get that context.
Jesus. <again. laughs> And of course, you know, back in those days, would have been a very common thing to happen for people to... The Roman emperors would come out and, you know, the people below would have to catch... Well, you get where I'm going with this.
Yeah, Caligula. I know.
Caligula. Yeah. Yeah, so speaking of bashing them all, let's talk about bashing them all again, but in a much, much nicer context.
That's the Game Boy Advance game, yep. Right?
Yes, it is, which came out in 2002, so there's a bit of a gap here prior to this
bash
one dropping.
Bash them all? Is that the English name for it?
Paf them all. Bash them all.
It's Paf Pa Tutatis.
Mm.
The copy I have right here, at least. Yeah, was this even real? Yeah, I guess it was. It might have been released outside of France.
In Britain, probably, yeah.
I only have a French box copy. I-Fi was only released in France. This is an interesting one, though, because, like, it sold almost like this budget collection title.
Yeah.
At two games in one. Again, kind of a non-descriptive box and back of the box. Just kind of like, it seems like just something that's been rushed out of the market. But this is a brand new beat 'em up.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, yeah. Too. Like, really.
I was quite taken aback by this when I tried it out, because I assumed, as you say, I assumed it would be relatively a cash-in.
Yeah.
Especially given the position that Asterix had in the market, at the gaming market these days. But no, it's I think it's quite attractive and quite fun. I quite like this.
Yeah, beautiful pixel graphics. So this is an interesting one, in the sense that they brought back a lot of the staff from Bitmanagers, who did the Game Boy and NES Asterix earlier, Asterix and Obelix on Super Nintendo. And once again, on music, you have Alberto Gonzalez back for the last time working on Asterix thus far. I mean, as of this recording, at least. Who knows if he ever comes back for another run, but this is a beat-em-up. The main game is a beat-em-up based on Asterix and Cleopatra, so it takes you through that kind of album. Fairly similar to how, like, the Konami beat-em-up is laid out. It's not a port of that or anything, but it has a lot of similarities, and it's just super detailed. Looks very similar to how they made the Super Nintendo game, which makes sense because the other game on the cartridge is actually a port of Asterix and Obelix from the Super Nintendo.
So you do get a lot of game for your money.
Yeah,
you get two games. I think my biggest problem with this is just the hit detection and the feedback on the offense that you have. It's in that realm of floatiness that I do not like on beat 'em ups.
There isn't much impact to your moves or anything. It is quite, as you say, it's quite floaty.
Yeah, I mean, that was also a problem with that very recent one that was put out some years ago, right?
Slap them all. Slap them all too will solve all the problems.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Bash them all, slap them all, whatever. They both have that same problem. But I actually think this one looks and feels a little bit better than that newer one, actually, because it does feel suitably like old school kind of 16-bit.
Yeah, the pixel art rather than the sort of...
The pixel art is awesome in this. That's really the best thing it's got going for it.
It's a second best thing.
But there's some fun animations too, like the pirates, like sliding down the mast, landing on their big sort of bulbous arses, bouncing up.
Yep.
It's nice. It's like there's love put into it, I think.
I mean, the developers were so familiar with Asterix. They'd already made Asterix games. From what I remember talking to Alberto about it, there were other plans in store here. There was going to be more platforming and kind of like, I think there was a bigger game planned, and then the scope just got cut. The money wasn't there for it. And so it became a beat 'em up. And I think that's also why, because I think it has like 5 or 6 stages. It's not very long. So
it's interesting that Asterix and Obelix is presented as the kind of bonus game when it's quite long. It's, you know, that becomes more the meaty kind of proposition, surely.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of where, I think they knew kind of that, like, this is neat, but it's on its own. The package isn't fully there. So they ported the Super Nintendo game, being that they were the original developers for it. And it's still Infogrames putting this out. So they could. And I mean, the Game Boy Advance was known for having Super Nintendo ports.
Yeah.
So,
like Prehistoric Man.
Prehistoric Man. yeah, it's just even the music. You know, Alberto's back, but you can tell that it's just kind of he doesn't have the time he needs to kind of get his juices flowing. Yeah. And so none of the melodies really pick up that energy that he's so known for.
The GBA
but I think it does sound really nice again.
It does sound really nice, especially for a GBA game.
Yeah,
I hate GBA sound.
It's one of the rare GBA games with that arpeggio sound, actually.
Yeah.
I'd like to know about this because I don't actually know this, but my understanding is that the built-in like non-sample GBA sound is horrible.
Yeah.
Which is why the sampled music is always so bitty and shitty sounding.
Right. I actually think the best examples are games that combine them, where you have a bit of that Game Boy sound chip with samples. You can create some pretty neat sounding stuff.
What sort of examples do you know? Do you know any examples that combine both?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, Shinin stuff.
Yeah, Shinin stuff is probably a good example of that.
Yeah.
And like, it's kind of like similar to what developers were doing on like a Mega Drive conceptually, where they were combining the different types of sound to create some really cool sounding compositions, right?
Yeah,
because that was a combination of PSG, FM synth, and then you had the PCM channel, and technically on Game Boy I guess you could do sample playback with the GB sound chip as well, but
yeah,
obviously samples take up more space and it kind of varied per game whether they use that or not. But
now that I think about it, I think the Sonic Advance might do it, but it makes me think of something like Mega Man Zero, where I love the music, but it sounds horrible because it's all done on the GBA and it just is crushed to pieces, and it's a shame. It's a real shame.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a soundtrack that's just a bit too reserved compared to the person behind it, and also I think the hardware itself led to that. So,
yeah.
I think reserved is kind of what I would call this the new game here, because Asterix and Obelix on Super Nintendo, we can go back and listen to our analysis of that, but it's the same here. It's a little bit more faded, and it doesn't look as great as it does on Super Nintendo. It doesn't sound as great either, but it's still a good game.
And they've even included the link up, haven't they? Like for multiplayer, which is kind of impressive.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's not a bad package at all. Again, released primarily in France. So
also a bit of a makeup game after the last one, maybe.
I mean, compared to Asterix and Obelix take on Caesar, this is a masterpiece. So,
but there's better to come as well.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I guess we should, I say wrap up, but there's still a few to cover, but they sort of come together a little bit, I think.
Yeah, they kind of float together, so there was
at least two of them.
Yeah, actually, these are pretty interesting, but go ahead.
Yeah, so this, we just mentioned Infogrames.
Yeah.
And there's kind of an important thing that happens here, because Puff to Tatis is like the very last Asterix game that comes under the Infogrames label, because in Europe at this time, there was a big consolidation of companies happening. I think around 1999, an American person, I forget his name, was Bruno something?
Bruno Bonnell?
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 Should be him, yeah.
Yeah, Bruno. It was kind of decided that, like, well, Europe is too divided, and there's so many software houses across it, but they're all doing different developments. It's hard to keep track. It should all be consolidated down to a company. And so they bought Atari.
That's right. And
started consolidating down. So things like Ocean, GT Interactive, Gremlin, all these companies you've heard of, Shiny, I think even Hasbro was part of this for a while. All these companies got consolidated into one. Philips Philips Media, the development house that Philips set up for CDI was even bought up. Another CDI trivia there. But what happened here was that the Atari Interactive startup, I mean, this is not the Atari that you knew before or today.
Nope.
This was the Infogrames Atari Interactive, which was one of the worst things to happen to the game industry, I think, ever. This does not get talked about enough, but like the damage that was done across Europe of this consolidation was absolutely unfathomable, because we suddenly now didn't have this unique widespread development scene across Europe. We had one big conglomerate that very soon after just didn't have the need for all these companies, right? That might sound a bit familiar. So yeah, this it leads into Asterix, I promise you, but do look into this. The story of Infogrames becoming Atari Interactive is a story that has not been told properly, I think. And the damage that it did to Europe in the video game sense is still felt. And if you ever wonder what happened to a lot of these companies that were doing Commodore 64 games and Amiga games, and what kind of happened in Spain and all these places which had like really vibrant development scenes, this is what happened. But of course, being Infogrames, they still had the Asterix license, so games from now on were published by Atari. So after the stunning success of Take on Caesar, the film and the video game, I think, again, there was a fatigue happening, because there was sequels to the live-action films that were successful. But that success, it had kind of waned off in terms of its merchandising again. So the movies were popular, but the merchandising... it went down, especially around the classic Asterix design.
Yeah.
And so a bigger production was put in place for this franchise to revitalize it for video game players, because, you know, as you've seen now, the video games based on the classic property were all very similar to one another. It's either a beat 'em up or a platformer or a beat 'em and eat 'em clone, you know.
Yeah.
Either of the three. And so, but the one thing that I've never really done, which kind of throughout we've talked in these episodes, we mentioned all the time, why wasn't there like an adventure game? Why wasn't there like a LucasArts type of game? Why wasn't there like an open world kind of experience with this really big franchise, this big world? And so in 2003-ish, we finally got what is kind of considered the revitalization of Asterix in video game form, which was XXL.
Okay. So yeah, Thomas and I, we loaded up Asterix and Obelix XXL, and I was moderately impressed with this one. My real being impressed moment comes when we get to the next one, actually.
A bit later,
But
this was respectable, that's the thing.
This one felt respectable. It felt like a legit platformer, kind of the Kaia Dark Legacy, Haven Call of the King level of platform game, where, you know, it's very PS2, lots of exaggerated geometry and those shapes kind of give it that cartoony kind of look, right?
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit weird, I suppose, in terms of just like the control, but overall it comes off as being quite competent and fun.
Yeah, it is, like you say, it's very much like a platformer of the PS2 era. It's a little bit uninspired, but the locations are real cool. I mean, it's very recognizable immediately this takes place in the world of Asterix. The combat system
feels all right.
It's deeper than you would expect. And it's not quite like a Zelda or anything, but it has exploration and kind of puzzle elements to the stages, which a lot of them... a lot of different gimmicks from like using the cannon and other gimmicks like that. It's not bad. You could tell that they were experimenting and having a lot of fun and freedom. with the property.
They also did some neat stuff with, like, there's even those moments where I recall early on we saw the Romans, like, in their shield formation, like you would often see, and you just jump right in the middle and take them out that way. And it's just, it felt like they were really trying to tie back into the Asterix franchise in a fun way and bring it into 3D in a way that they, I would say this is the first time that we'd actually seen good 3D Asterix gameplay, right? Like the other stuff prior was okay of the 3D games.
The only comparison you really have, right, is like mini games.
Yeah,
like
that's true.
Small bite size.
Or the interstitial sections and
that doesn't really count, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it counts in the sense that like those, even though it's bite sized, the locations and kind of the graphical design of the backgrounds and stuff are very vibrant.
But it can't carry a whole game. That's my
absolutely
point.
Not. But like you could see that they're picking up on these elements that later on will be used in this series as well. The one thing about this one is that it uses a redesign for characters again. It just kind of gives them more of a darker, more
earthy
look.
I think in a way more.
Yeah.
Somewhere between the comics and the film, I think.
It's not quite like what if Nomura designed Asterix yet? He doesn't have enough belts.
That would be something.
They do have new belts. That's my big takeaway when I bought this. It's like, why are their belts so different? They're all like metallic and like detailed. I guess that was how they got across that this is a real Asterix. Look at the belt. And actually,
Asterix can't be in Kingdom Hearts because he already has an X in his name. It'd be too confusing.
Yeah. This was released in the US.
Yeah, it was.
Only on PlayStation 2, but it was called Kick Buttocks.
That's so shit. I'm sorry. No.
That's a terrible name.
I hate that.
Name.
No wonder
I don't think that XXL is that good of a name, but it's better than Kick Buttocks.
I mean, XXL illustrates at least that like this is a much larger Asterix than they've ever seen. You know?
Yeah.
And it has kind of like a grim start, by the way. I don't know if you guys noticed, but like you start the game and the whole village is on fire.
Yeah,
it's pretty dark,
And which immediately, so the story of the game, very much just standard Asterix fare, but really well played out. Voice acting, excellent. Character animations, excellent. It feels like an Asterix adventure, kind of through and through. But as you'll notice with the later games, this game is just a tad bit too dark. And I don't mean like, it's like the source material is dark. I'm just saying like the stages and the textures and just overall
composition. It's a tiny bit muddy, I think.
It is, especially compared to what would follow.
Oddly
enough, I think the GBA version actually kind of solves that by making it much more sky blue.
Oh my
kind
god,
of.
The GBA version, dude. That we cannot move on until we mention that.
I want to briefly with XXL. I mean, I just want to say like I don't want to be the negative person. I don't dislike this game, but I think it gets boring about 2.5 stages in.
It does,
because you'll go onto another screen, and if you're anything like me and you like collecting things, you'll see that another huge stadium-sized area full of like 600 boxes.
Yeah,
and you're just like,
and that's where that's what the like this game really.
There's a lot.
It brings it down. It's just a lot of boxes. It's a lot of just It's very European.
I think we'll get to it, but I think the sequel actually really tightened that aspect.
Oh my god, yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll get
it's
there.
It's a sort of a first try to get this working, and a lot of boxes, but...
Yeah.
I don't think this is bad, but if you are a collectathon guy like I am, you are going to hurt when you play this, because you're going to spend like 10 minutes in each area.
If you run through it, it's fairly brisk.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of locations. They vary a lot. They're just a bit dull. And they're very open and just, it feels like just kind of set pieces, but not interact. They're not very interactive. It's just very open spaces with like a few plings to pick up.
Yeah.
And some enemies and some boxes, many boxes, many, many boxes.
I would say, while it looks visually nice as well, the locations do kind of run together after a while.
Oh,
I mean, you have
absolutely.
Different themes, but each area kind of feels largely similar.
I think it's
similar.
The muddiness.
Yeah,
it's
maybe
the textures start feeling the same. And
they remastered this, and I think they actually made that issue a bit worse with the remastered graphics.
Oh, we'll get
as
there
well.
Too.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
This episode's never going to end. It's going to be part 4 coming up.
But
we got half an hour, we can knock this out.
we'll do it. But yeah, let's quickly talk about the Game Boy Advance game, because it's legendary, right?
So it's crazy. It's really fun.
It's done by Veles Dubail, who... That name isn't too familiar. Well, I mean, now it is for the Game Boy stuff that they did. But for me, I always liked them because they were Loriciel, who did like Jim Power and other very French Amiga games.
Yeah.
Jim Power, of course, had a soundtrack by Chris Hulsbeck.
Mm.
When they got to the Game Boy Advance, I mean, you look at all the games that they did, like V-Rally 3 and all these wacky races. I mean, they... pushed hardware in a way that like is absolutely stunning. I think when you look at it now and you have places like DF, you can pick apart what they're doing and kind of, oh, okay, this is how they did it.
Yeah.
So maybe the effect is muted now just because people like John Lindman have come around and taught us much more than we knew back then. But
thanks a bunch, John, getting rid of the magic.
When I got this on my regular Game Boy Advance, because I bought this, as you would expect, I bought this and the PlayStation game, PlayStation 2 version, later on the GameCube version, on the same day. And I could not believe what I was seeing. The fact that you had this fully 3D game on Game Boy Advance, something that stood up in my eyes at that time to a next-gen game, was completely baffling. Now, John, you can probably let us know now how they did it.
How they did the GBA stuff?
Yeah.
I can't really say. I mean, the GBA itself doesn't have any special hardware for this. It's just really smart programming from the developers, right? It's an ARM, it's a 32-bit ARM processor, interestingly enough. But there was a lot of that 3D-ish stuff happening on GBA, if you recall.
Right.
I think they brought like the driver games to it.
They did, yeah.
But this one somehow they came up with this like what looks like a polygon engine, like a very simple polygon engine. And with sprite characters, right? So that's obviously key, though, is because they weren't going to be able to do 3D model characters. But yeah, the 3D engine they created, I admit, I haven't studied this enough to know how it works, because it absolutely blows my mind every time I see it. Like, it genuinely doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there is... when you boot it up and look at it today, especially in the emulators, you can kind of see... that they're using some trickery, because like even the 3D houses and whatnot, they stretch and turn with you. So there is a combination of a lot of 2D elements being used.
Oh, there's some of that, but I think it's a lot of like affine texture warp. Just like PlayStation 1, basically, right? Where it's like a software rasterized solution that's cheap to render. But the polygon structures behave exactly like PlayStation 1 games. But I think they use even like lower resolution texture surfaces. And maybe they're not even using traditional. I actually don't know how they're doing the texture work either.
Yeah.
It's baffling.
It really is. So
I remember playing this on an emulator, because I played everything JBO and emulator back then, and thinking just like, oh, it's like, it's impressive, but it's like the version of Doom or something. It's all 2D. But then I started climbing on stuff, and I was like, ah, okay. You can push boxes around, you can climb on the boxes, you can get onto the rooftops and stuff. This is crazy. I don't know how they're doing this.
I mean, yeah, it is a fully 3D adventure game on Game Boy Advance. And it might not seem that interesting today, just considering like how like you play games on the Switch and stuff now, but having this kind of game handheld at this time, even for Game Boy Advance, was unheard of. This is before DS and PlayStation Portable, so you had like racing games and things that we mentioned, that like some of them toyed with 3D, but it's racing games and there's only so much you can do with them. But like here you had like
full 3D
villages
movement.
And open areas and like things that you just... No, I could not believe.
Yeah, just all done on the CPU. Very smart programming. Yeah, they do, of course, also limit the draw distance significantly, obviously. Right. But still, it feels like a miracle. And actually, the sprite quality is also impressive. They're like pretty high res, lots of animation frames, and it feels like it's well rooted into the world.
So, yeah, Asterix and Obelix XXL. Well worth a test drive.
I would actually suggest more than the PS2 game. This is the one that people should just check out. Honestly, to experience it.
I think it's more fun the way that it's been cut down, you know, the way that it's been condensed in. They managed to get like the there's like a river rafting minigame in there as well, I think. And that's surprisingly good as well. I mean, I would rate this version over the big boy version for sure.
Yeah.
Something about the visuals always reminds me of Magic Carpet, the Magic Carpet engine from Bullfrog, where it's got that really short view distance and kind of very warpy looking terrain, but like somehow it just works.
I guess the only thing I would knock it back for, and this is quite petty, is that it's password only, I think. There's no battery backup, which is a bit annoying. But
hey, but at least that means you can save without worrying about a dead battery.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Mm-hmm. There's always a positive, too.
Yeah.
And speaking of positives, I mean, so yeah, XXL, especially the Game Boy Advance version, do check it out. The Big Boy one, if you can locate the PC version or something like that, I'd say just give it a test because you might have nostalgia for this era.
Yeah.
There is a remake, like Stu mentioned, that came out a few years ago. We'll quickly summarize those afterwards.
But yeah.
I wouldn't go for that one. So, but I would, however, absolutely go to the next game. And oh boy, this one.
That's an upgrade for sure.
Who the heck made this? Like the programming guys, like this is nuts what they achieved here.
On which one? The next one?
Yeah, the next one. XXL.
Yeah,
2.
Yeah.
So actually,
you could still be talking about the Game Boy Advance games.
Can I give a preamble to this? Unless, John, you were about to do just that.
Well, I was just going to give an initial impression based on the very first room and why this like immediately floored me, right?
So
you have that original game, whatever. It looks okay. This one, however, opens up in this gorgeous cityscape with lots of rounded architecture. You know, it has all these smoothed off, just it's beautiful looking. You walk forward a little bit, you see these like fine marble surfaces, maybe. I'm not actually sure what material it is, but it's actually reflective with like these like somewhat like diffuse reflections of environmental scenery around you. It's got blades of grass that kind of like all filling the fields with these trees around it. There's just a tremendous amount of detail everywhere. The textures are actually pretty high res, and a lot of the surfaces and the stones are actually made up of polygon models as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is PS2 and it's 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
It actually feels like almost like Naughty Dog grade in terms of what they pulled off.
It really does. So this, the game you're talking about is XXL2, Mission Las Vegas.
Yes.
And the lead up to this game was actually one of the bigger ones for an Asterix game ever.
Okay.
I mean, comparable, I think, to when like the Super Nintendo and NES games came out.
Yeah.
This was one that was actually promoted, believe it or not. It's been a while.
For me, I only heard about this one because I think it was in on a DVD preview for a magazine that I had or something. And it was like, oh yeah, this game is like, it's going to parody other games. It's going to have references. And this is before indie games rinsed the shit out of that idea.
Sure.
And I had never seen this happen before. And I was like, oh, okay, you've got my attention now. That sounds
this
fun.
This is not just like, it's not just a gimmick. Because I think, I've talked to some Americans who've seen this and been like, well, it's just a parody. Yeah, and I mean, yes, it is. But look at what Asterix in itself is. And
right.
Look at what they're doing now here with video game property. They're just appropriating the video game spectrum into what Asterix has always done. And it does so absolutely flawlessly. So this isn't just a matter of like, well, this guy looks like Sonic and hey, this guy looks like Mark. They've all been contextualized into this world.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
And they look absolutely ridiculous, but in such an incredibly fun way.
They got the Sam Fisher goggles.
They got the Splinter Cell guy showing up.
They've got Mario with the water pack.
Like, yeah, this is right Sunshine. After Sunshine.
There is some stuff which is kind of like
Tetris is in there.
Like it's there. Like there is some visual gag stuff, but as you say, most of it's contextualized. Most of it's in game. Like you've got the Ryu guy throwing hadokens at you.
The first person.
Yeah, and when you kill him, he goes like.
Yeah,
in slow motion. It's perfect.
It's perfect, right?
Yeah.
And then you have like puzzles with the Tetris blocks, Tom mentioned. you come to like this barrel sequence that's going down these like construction like things, and you're like, man, is this like Donkey Kong? You get to the top and it's Donkey Kong. You have like Pac-Man shows up, but it's done so lovingly that I'm actually surprised. When I played this the first time, I couldn't believe it. Some similar to John said as well, it just looks absolutely gorgeous. We mentioned like dull colors on the previous one.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Just color overload.
It's one of the best looking PS2 games, I'd say.
One of the absolute best.
Yeah, it was quite. Well, I was about to say it's quite late, but it's not because PS2 had an infinitely long life, but this was quite like.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't there on the height of the system,
This is one that I bought, and I bought because I didn't buy any of these of the other Asterix games like in the previous era, but I bought this one because of the parody thing.
Yeah,
and I think it was also quite cheap when it came out as well the UK at least. And I remember playing it and just being like, "Oh my god! Like this has been, if anything, underrated. Why is nobody like this? Is really fun. This is like up there with the better platformers I've played on this system. Yeah. Like, it's enormous fun."
You know,
John was saying like Naughty Dog. I mean, this feels like
it's polished as a heck. Platformer. Yeah,
it's like one of the most polished.
It's so impressive.
Well executed, technically and mechanical. Platformers you'll find on the entire system.
Didn't they?
It just feels like with the first one they learn to walk, and now all of a sudden they're just running.
Right. Yeah. Wasn't there like guys in there that like fight you with rings, wearing like Sonic the Hedgehog style?
Yeah, they're,
like,
and they move really fast as well, right? They have like this.
God, there's so like, you're right. It's very funny now. There's also like Mario style platforming with like PAL blocks and stuff, if I recall. But the whole thing is just like it's parody before that had become a big thing, like you say.
Yeah.
Like this is the kind of stuff Matt Hazard wished it could have done.
Oh God! Yeah, right. Yes, Jesus! Thanks for reminding me of that one.
And also, I mean, if you think about the time in 2006, also the feeling of we can do that actually interesting because nobody did it before, at least not in a big capacity. I mean, there have been smaller games that did a bit of that, but not like that.
No, and it's done. I think it's done tastefully enough that it never feels like it's you never grown. It's and again, we mentioned like how
maybe
it's
grown in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's done in such a way that you laugh with the game.
Yeah, and the game's not built around it either, right? It's the stuff that pops up while you're playing.
Yeah.
There's some stuff. Is this the game that has the thing where if you beat up enough Romans, your hands go on fire?
Yes.
And you use that to solve certain puzzles as well, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was so smart, like, because they don't... It's like the previous game has... You're fighting for the sake of fighting. It's a bit repetitive. And in the second game, it's like, no, to progress, you have to beat up enough Romans to set fire to this thing, or to beat up enough Romans, like, with these specific conditions. And you get all these new, like, you can pick up Romans and swing them around, like, whacking other Romans, like, almost like Dynasty Warriors or something. It's crazy how fun it is.
Yeah. I mean, it just an absolute smash for the platform. And I think this one was not released in the US.
No, I know. That's the thing.
Did they not release the DS or the PSP version?
This would have been like 2006 era, though. This was the year where PS3 was coming out. God of War 2, I think, was about out on PS2 and one of the last big PS2 games. I think things had been changing by this point.
Yeah.
And I think PS2 just wasn't that viable. So it was still viable enough, but I can't imagine them saying, hey, let's release this IP that's not that popular in North America in North America again, regardless of how good the game actually is.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, there is a PC version, so you can absolutely play the original version.
Or just buy it on PS2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
a remake again, which I think is quite all right, to be honest. But
It's okay, but they made some... There's some graphical changes and just...
I think playing it on PS2 is the best way to go, especially for like the Retronauts audience, because on PS2, it's a technical masterpiece. In the remaster version, it's perfectly cromulent, but not much more than that.
Yeah. Can I briefly mention that this was on PSP as Mission Wifix or Wifix or
that
something like that.
I've not tried actually. How well, is that?
It's actually not that bad. It's basically the same again on PSP, just obviously cut down graphically. But there's also a DS version, which is a 2D platformer, and it's also fine.
Whoa. It's fine, yeah.
It's nice and smooth, like graphics and everything.
So the DS version has a lot of these like touch puzzles and things added to it.
Yeah.
And it actually uses a lot of graphics from the comic book, which is kind of interesting because the redesigns are in full effect here. So you have this kind of inconsistency in the presentation.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not, I would say that the DS port is probably the least interesting. The PSP very much of its era PSP port. Nothing wrong with that, but just kind of that's what.
Could I ask you? So I know we're not going to harp on it, but the Rome mastered version,
right?
When you use the button that puts that into the original graphics, is it still not the original graphics?
So it's still higher res, which is some of the issues with it.
But have they changed the gameplay as well? I can't really recall because it had been such a while since I played the.
Yeah, so they changed some puzzles around.
Oh, jeez.
It's I don't want to go too much into this remix. They are there, and if you want to try them, but there was also a new one. XXL 3 came out.
Oh, there's two new ones, aren't there? They did like XXXL as well.
Yeah.
Why do they even call them XXL when they're nothing like them?
Know.
Well, I know why, to sell copies, but.
To sell copies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the remakes are out there. And those were released in the US market. So it's. You get into like a difficult territory there, right? Because it's like, well, they did make it more available, but it's not the same experience. So,
no.
And they kind of. They're cheap. They're cheap remasters. I'm not a big fan of them. I wish they just took a little bit more time to polish up and bring the games back as they were, but instead they're changed and kind of scaled back. So it's one of those remasters where it's like, I mean, it's neat, but you should just play the original instead.
So if they didn't, release this in the US, Mission
Not
Las Vegas.
The original, no.
So is the version that you would get and play, is it compromised, or did they make it run at 60 hertz for this one?
Oh no, it's the remake is in 60.
No. Sorry, I mean like the original game is. Does it like feel sluggish? Because I don't remember it feeling sluggish. Or had they actually
done
like
it? It's made for PAL.
No, it's made.
So it was made for. Okay.
It's fine. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know. I was.
I can't remember if it supports 60 hertz or not.
It does not.
But it does at least run at a stable 50 frames per second.
That's good. That's
which
good,
looks then. The same, basically, just with more flicker. And
you can't play the PC version at 60 though. So.
Okay,
true. But still, I think 50 is fine as long as the game is designed for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being a bit sort of too fussy here. It's bloody good. Like, you should play it.
Oh, this is probably, I mean, apart from the arcade game and
even then,
NES,
this might be the best
one. I would personally say this was the best one for me.
This, for me, exists in the like top 10 of PlayStation 2's library. It's that good for me. So,
I mean, that's a crazy thing to say, but then you like if you like Asterix that much, then I get you.
Incredible system.
Yeah.
But
it's also very cheap.
It's very cheap. So, and yeah, if you, I mean, there are ways of playing this, right? On original hardware or not. So,
yeah.
But it's one that you, or the remake. The remake of 2, I will say, is the least offensive of those remakes.
Yeah. I would, see, personally, I would contend. Based solely on my memory of the original being a little bit lesser, not lesser, like it's a worse game, but my memory is just a bit like bad. I thought it was fine when I played it and I enjoyed playing the remake, but if it has been changed up for the worse significantly, then yeah, you know, just buy the remake and then just play the ROM of the original. How about that?
Yeah, then like graphically wins. Even, like the way that the PlayStation 2 or even Windows version looks is just much more appropriate, whereas the remake looks super cheap. I was about to say an expletive, but it looks so cheap in the way that they did it. So... you don't get that same pop from putting it in the first time.
I've just remembered that there's a character who's like Lara Croft, except it's like a fat dude dressed as Lara Croft called Larry Croft.
That's one of the bosses.
That's so good.
I love it. He's on the cover too. So, and the cover, by the way, just like a GTA cover.
Awesome cover, yeah. You know, I never clocked that until you just said it, and holy shit, it is a GTA cover, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's just straight up a GTA cover. So,
even the text, even the Mission Las Vegas text is GTA. Oh, this has changed my life.
So, this is one that, if you're a fan of great games on PlayStation 2, I mean, this should be very high on your list. And, yeah, cheap to pick up.
It's, yeah.
Absolutely worth it. If you absolutely need, like, something on original hardware at, you know, your own refresh rate, go get the PSP version just to dip your toes in the water. But
Perfectly crumulent version.
Like. Yeah, perfectly fine.
And there's one more game in this sort of loose trilogy, isn't there?
Yeah, it's going a bit back down again now.
I wouldn't say it's bad, but...
No, not bad.
But I mean, we had just a really exceptional one.
Mm. It's not as good as 2, but it's probably better than 1 still.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, as I mentioned, there was an XXL 3 that came out 2 years ago now.
Mm. It's not very good.
But this game, actually, XXL 2 Las Vegas, has a sequel that came out in 2008,
yep,
which is Asterix and the Olympic Games. So this one is kind of weird because it was actually made to be a tie-in with the last, at that time, the last live-action film, but it uses the classic Asterix design. So it's already kind of like, but considering what we got from a take on Caesar, I guess that's a better proposition anyway. And it's perfectly competent, but going from kind of the nature of the, you know, the video game parodies and contextualizing that in Asterix and all the wonderful puzzles that you have in XXL 2, Asterix and the Olympic Games is a much more straightforward and gimmicky platformer on the same engine.
Yeah.
And as such, you pick it up and it's fine. It's just, it feels very much like, well, they ran out of ideas.
Mm.
And considering how many great ideas they had for XXL 2, it's somewhat of a shock because it just, you just feel nothing playing this game. That's the best thing I can say. You don't feel offended or anything like that. You could probably have a lot of fun with it. But if you come off XXL 2, this game is just such a letdown.
Yeah.
That it really starts with that opening, just chasing the boar around in the forest. Yeah. Like, first of all, the frame rate is worse than the last game.
PS2, right?
Yeah. The what you're actually doing there just isn't all that interesting.
Yeah.
And it just makes a really bad first impression. And it kind of continues, as far as I've played anyway, where the level design and the scenarios just aren't as well thought out or fun or funny as the prior game, right? You just kind of,
I think it's just tied down to the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah, that's true.
So it's you know, they have that movie tie-in, which probably handicapped them, but also it's,
I think,
like,
that really
the Olympic Games
held them back.
It brings in this gimmicky, I mean, XXL 2 could have been super gimmicky too, don't get me wrong, because you have all these video game based things. But what they did was, like, they made a lot of cool puzzles based around the logic of those games that was, you know, basing itself on. So you have all this variation, you have all this wonderful nostalgic feeling around all these different areas, and everything feels fresh. When you get to this, it just feels like another 3D platformer that happens to be tied into a movie, and it's like just gimmicks around these Olympic games
in a weird way.
Crappy mini games, basically.
It kind of feels like a sequel to XXL1.
Yeah.
Like, if XXL 2 hadn't happened, right? Like, it has that same kind of feel.
Very good point.
I mean, to a point, maybe. I think there is much more variety than there was in XXL 1.
True.
But I think one of the problems that Olympic Games has personally is it seems to borrow some mechanics from, like, for example, Prince of Persia. So you've got a lot of clambering in this game that's very slow, and that's not really what you want to be doing in an Asterix game.
Yeah, it's just...
I think it's better than the first one, personally, but yeah.
It is better than the first one.
Sorry, that's not what you were saying. I misunderstood you there. It's as if two didn't happen. I agree with that.
I think the difference is, though, it's like when XXL1 came out, that felt new and kind of exciting, but it quickly becomes boring. Mm. This just kind of starts off boring, and you've seen it before. So even though it's better, it's like it's more disappointing just because, like, well, your reference now is that incredible sequel.
Yeah.
And so you go into this and it's just like, I don't know, like, I had more fun playing the last one, and that's not how you should feel when you play a sequel. And I mean, this was also the first next gen at the time, you know, Asterix game, because this actually came out on 360.
That's right.
And believe it or not, it came out on the 360
and PS3
in
right?
the US.
Yeah.
Where the movie didn't get released.
That's right.
So, extremely strange. It's actually an expensive 360 game now in the
US.
Is
there not also... I thought there was a PS3 version as well.
I don't think so. I think it is 360.
It's only 360?
Yeah, I might be mistaken, but I'm reasonably certain that's the case, because I know I went to buy this on 360 with the expectation it would be cheap. And
yeah, maybe you're right. That's interesting. Mm. No, yeah. That's right. It wasn't PS3. It also came out on the Wii. That's what it was. I knew it was on two of those next-gen systems.
I'm assuming it's the same as the PS2 version, but with Waggle. Yeah,
I think the Wii version is just like the PS2 version, though.
right.
Yeah, so the Wii version... I think it's exactly the same. I can't. There is some waggling on, like,
there's some waggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's on, like,
the mini games, like the Olympic games,
the running and long jumps and stuff.
Yeah.
So is the 360 version basically the same as PS2, but 60 frames per second, but with bloom? Is that what we're talking about?
No, it's actually probably less bloomy in a weird way.
Oh, okay.
It looks well, there is some bloom, but it looks similar to the PS2 version, but the textures are higher res overall.
Very similar to the PC version.
Yeah, and the frame rate's more consistent, basically.
I'd like to get that 360 version for God knows what reason.
Yeah, I mean, I have it for both regions. It's not... I mean, it looks like the Windows versions.
Yeah.
It's fine, but the game itself is just the same. Kind of whatever. So, like, it's not that fun. The DS version...
That one I've never played.
Yeah, it is mostly just minigames.
Oh, so figures.
Not very
stylus-based?
Stylus-based.
Of course.
A lot of it, yeah. So you have to, like, go back and forth in circles. And, it's one of those.
So you know what you're getting into with the old DS license games there.
So, yeah, it's just a shame because, like, XXL2's puzzles and stuff were so intricate and fun, and they traded all that away for cheap minigames. I mean, that's what it is. So.
Would it be fair to say that Mission Las Vegas left such a long sort of tail that the Microids games that we get these days have pretty much all been chasing that kind of clout?
Since?
Yeah. Apart, I mean, you got stuff like Slap Them All, which is very obviously them going, hey, remember the arcade game?
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is a shitty version of it.
I guess we are entering our very last thing here, I mean, this was the last kind of big production, original production that happened until 2019.
Yeah.
Because after this, you'll find Asterix games on mobile, DS, there was like a brain trainer game, and it becomes very kind of educational and, you know, because Asterix was now pretty much entering a stage where it hadn't really been passed down to the 2000 generation from the parents, right? Like, the cartoons and stuff had happened in the 90s, but now the people who have been born 2001, whatever.
There's no more exposure. That's a thing. I mean, in German television, there was an Asterix movie every weekend, basically, on TV, but not anymore. It's over.
Yeah, it's stopped. But like anything else, once you get to the late 2010s, it becomes this icon again, just this recognizable property that kind of comes back. I don't know what happens. There's probably a study of it, but a lot of these older properties, Ninja Turtles as well.
Was that when movies like Mansions of the Gods were coming out?
Yeah, so The Mansion of the Gods was the 3D animated film, which is incredible.
It looks beautiful. Fantastic. I was really impressed by the visuals.
Oh, yeah.
Both of the 3D animated films should check out.
I mean, they're not quite the level of the Cryo game, but good enough. Or Creo.
No.
They make you cry when you play them.
But do if you do want to check out kind of like what do not watch the live action sequels. Watch the first one, but the 3D films, absolutely fantastic. Mm. So if you can see those. So that revitalized. And
of course, also new comics at this point that were better than what we had before.
Yeah. So, and Udarsu has passed as of this recording, as the original artist. So both of them are now gone. So kind of Asterix is in completely new hands. And a lot of people now creating Asterix are trying to kind of bring back the quality that they remembered from their childhoods. Yeah. You know, people who are now in their 40s and 50s.
My understanding is it's paying off, right? They're selling very,
absolutely,
very well.
I mean, it's stronger now than it's been in probably 25 years.
That's good.
And with that, you suddenly start seeing, Microids picked up the license and did the XXL.
Need to get some Microids cream over here.
They did two before one, didn't they?
They did two, which
smart move, to be honest.
Yeah, it's fine. Mm. Then they did one, and then they did XXL3, which was their own take in a brand new game. It is not very good, unfortunately.
It's not even a platformer. It's like a top-down.
Yeah, what's up with this one? This is one I have not played either at all.
It's like, boring as hell.
What's it about?
I played it as though that it's really, really boring. You walk around, you hit boxes, you hit some Romans. It looks all a bit brownish.
Well, imagine something like Diablo, except you have like one move and you don't get any stats, like, and you don't get any loot. What's the point?
It's just meandering a lot.
Yeah.
It's really disappointing. That's all I can say. I don't want to go too negative on this.
No.
Well, these people, they're not terrible games, so they're just kind of disappointing. And then you also had Slap Them All, which is the brawler that has hand-drawn graphics. It looks absolutely stunning in still.
Then you play it.
It's absolutely boring in motion.
Yeah, I think from all of us, I'm the one who enjoyed the game the most.
Yeah.
It's nothing wrong with that again, but it's just so... There is not enough...
too long. There's
We live in an era of Shredder's Revenge and Streets of Rage 4 and like people who redefine the brawler and Slap Them All just kind of... It stays way, way too conservative.
What I can say about that, so I know people who are not into brawlers at all, who are not into these classic arcade games. They saw the game, saw the graphics, bought the game, and enjoyed it a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are not that genre savvy, I think you're fine with it. But of course, if you know Shredder's Revenge and Streets of Rage 4, it just can't hold up.
That was made by Mr. Nuts Studios. That's actually their name.
That's a great name.
And they announced a new one as of this recording.
A new sequel. Mr. Nuts?
When are we doing a Mr. Nuts episode, by the way?
We're doing
whenever.
That. That's happening.
Yeah, I'm down.
If we do that, I can maybe get some of the organized creators of the game.
Get them and we'll berate them to their faces.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I actually like Mr. Nuts.
I love Mr. Nuts.
They're on the corner. They're in Frankfurt.
I like Mr. Nuts Hoppin' Mad. How about that?
So, yeah, I like that game too.
But anyway,
Asterix games today, they're still coming. Micro, they just announced the Slap Them All 2, which looks like it's addressing a lot of the issues with 1.
As we mentioned, there's also XXXL as well.
And why not call them Slap Them Even More? I don't get it.
There's XXXL, and there are other things I've heard. So Asterix is going to continue. There's new animated films in production.
Cool.
Do check out the 3D Asterix movies. They're fantastic. And, I mean, this kind of ends the episode on a fairly good note. I mean, it's an active franchise today. It doesn't always get the best games.
No.
But in comparison to where it was by the late 90s and then by the late 2000s, it is now back to being a cultural icon of Europe. I think people look at Asterix now with a lot of reverence and love and nostalgia.
Yeah.
And I think we're able to pass down a lot of that quality to younger generations. So I'm pretty happy with where Asterix is now compared to where I felt it was 10 years ago when I wrote that original article. Because at that time it was pretty dire and it seemed like no new comics were even getting off the ground. So,
right.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Asterix, we're now probably in the greatest time for it.
Hooray!
All right, hey,
you did it. What a nice. Positive way to end this.
I mean, we should be sitting around the table with a boar in the twilight.
Yep, strung up the
in these
old,
three episodes we've done together.
Let's bring up Parrish, maybe.
Yeah. I love Asterix, as you can tell probably from these episodes. I'm very honored that I can be here to talk about them.
And where can, on that note, where can we find you? Where should we wish to pursue you and shout at you about Asterix on the internet?
So I'm on social medias. There's several of them now.
Mm.
Pick your poison. But PC98_Audi. You can also find me at Limit Run Games, developing Carbon Engine games. And of course, my favorite endeavor, you can find me alongside John Lindman as his little asterisk in the corner doing DF Retro.
He's
here.
My little wacky on projects. Yeah,
so do sign up for the DF Patreon. Check out our retro features and shout loud enough and just maybe we'll do some DF Retro on Asterix.
Oh man, that's a tall order. But yeah, as he suggests, I am also over on Digital Foundry. That's my main home base there. You can find me at Dark1X on various social media platforms because, God, there's so many now. Also, youtube.com/Digital Foundry. There's retro. There's modern. There's all kinds of stuff there. If you like looking at like close-up screenshots of grass textures, you might really enjoy this month.
That's my favorite.
I do like looking at that.
Mm. Touching grass.
Well, Thomas, where can we find you?
So, if you want to find me, you can buy M Games in Germany, of course. Print magazine, still around. You could come to university at Dieburg, or you just follow me on Blue Sky at Tapir Fortuna.
Hooray!
We did it.
Yay! Yeah.
Sorry, that ended way sooner than I was expecting, and I started building a house of cards. That's not true. I didn't know I said that. Thank you for listening to Retronauts. If you like the show and you like to support it, if you don't already, tut, you can find us on patreon.com/Retronauts, where for a mere $5 per month, you can get a bunch of stuff. You can get 2 extra monthly episodes, completely unheard anywhere else. There's well over 100 on there now if you've not caught up. You'll get Diamond Fight's excellent This Week in Retro columns. You'll get access to the Discord where you can say swear words at me and I'm not allowed to reply. It's one of the main perks. All sorts of great stuff that you can get, and it costs next to nothing. There's also a $3 tier where you just get the early episodes, the week early episodes, but that's not really as good now, is it? It's just not as much stuff. Thanks very much for listening, and we're finally done with Asterix. I feel pleased that we've come this far. Unfortunately, I think we missed this one random DS games. We've got to do the whole thing over again from the start.
We mentioned that. It was the Brain Trainer and some other things. So.
Yeah, we got to do the whole thing over again. Because
you've
got
at least
you
got Beat 'em, Eat 'em in here. That's something, right?
Yeah, but at least we talked about Beat 'em and Eat 'em.
We'll
sure.
do a part 4 exclusive Patreon where talk about the DS games.
All right, thanks. Yeah. Thanks very much. And yeah, keep an eye out for that part 4, which is definitely not going to happen. Thank you.